Here at the BQN Network, we support and express solidarity for all of the writers and actors that have brought us the stories we passionately speak about. We continue to show love to all that are fighting the good fight for WGA, SAG-AFTRA, and any upcoming strikes. We stand with you.
You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast here on the BQN and the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kelvin, and with me today are Mark and Christos. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey, Kelvin, good to see you.
And
you. Good morning, Kelvin. How are you?
Excellent. Christos, we haven't podcasted for so long together. I miss you.
I miss you too. I feel like the stars keep aligning and the weeks I'm on, you're not on, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So it's good that we're both here.
Even my laptop conspired against us 2 weeks ago when I tried to record with you.
The effort was there. The effort was there. And of course, the wheel manages to fall off again because we don't have Amy this week.
I know. A last minute dropout today. So still not all four of us together. We'll the planets will align and all four of us will be on it some week, I'm sure.
I believe Amy is off fighting alien Nazis. So, God bless her.
Good for her.
She's a regular Ripley.
Right, well, before we get to the matter at hand, let's strap ourselves into the escape pod.
This is the bridge. All hands to emergency escape pods.
Escape pod!
This is the section of the show where we like to reflect on this week's dropped episode of Lower Decks. And this week we are looking at In the Cradle of Vexillion. So, Mark, first thoughts, what did you think of the episode?
I enjoyed it. I think that I enjoyed it more than the second episode of this season. I liked the first the most because it was Voyager-centric. The second was Moopsie, right? Was that the second one? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Moopsie episode, I Have No Bones. Yeah, that was all right. I liked it. But I think this third one, again, I enjoyed. I remember finishing it and having that feeling of like, oh, yeah, here's another really good one.
Yeah, me too. I think Lower Decks is just so good now that it. I don't think it was the strongest episode of the season, but I very much enjoyed it. It was a good strong, like, 8 or 9. I think coming off the back of the Voyager episode and the Moopsie episode, as it shall forever be called, it was hard. But I think it just had some really good, solid Lower Decks jokes. I liked the, you know, the computer system. It reminded me of the Custodian from TNG's When the Bow Breaks, that type of computer system.
Oh, I think it was supposed to. Yeah. Now, I liked the fact that there was some really good, I guess, lessons you could take from it on proper leadership styles. And you could see that with Boimler, but also with Captain Freeman.
Yeah.
And the way that they were leading their teams, and both of them actually were trying to lead from example, but in doing so they weren't, you know, really recognizing the, you know, efforts of the people that work under them and allowing them to shine. And so we saw that. I thought that was cool. And also the director of the episode, we follow each other on Blue Sky, which is kind of cool.
Oh, that's nice. I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't notice. I didn't make the parallel between the kind of the Boimler and the Freeman leadership. I only really, maybe it's because it resonated a lot with me that I've done that kind of Boimler micromanagement of I'll just do the job myself rather than letting the new starters do the work. However, I would say Boimler's intentions were a lot more honorable. He didn't want them to hurt themselves or put themselves in danger. Yeah. When I was a first manager, I would do the work myself because I didn't want it to be done incorrectly, which would then reflect on me. So that was kind of the way I came at it. There was no exploding bombs or anything in the world of health and safety that I work in would kind of defeat the object.
Can we give a shout out to Lynn, right? Is that her name?
Yeah.
The Vulcan, she is hilarious and not trying to be, but I love when she's on screen, and I think she played really well with Boimler. I think the two of them are very funny together.
Yeah, it's nice to have this extra character now that you can mix up the dynamics. You know, she was brought in, she paired immediately with Tendi. This week she was with Boimler, and yeah, just that deadpan comedy that is great for a Vulcan.
Yeah.
Okay, so this week we are returning to our time travel series, and we're on part six. Wow. And we're going to be looking at a two-part Enterprise episode, Stormfront, which kicks off season four. So previously covered episodes are from the original series, Tomorrow Is Yesterday, and Assignment Earth. From the animated series, we did Yesteryear, Deep Space Nine, Trials and Tribulations, and Prodigy, Time Amok. Just looking at the notes there, when you see TOS now, do you think those old scientists?
Oh, yes.
It's so absolutely. What have they done to us? Oh, wow. Right. Who wants to volunteer to give a little bit of a synopsis of what happens in this episode? And don't just say Space Nazis.
Space Nazis. yes. So as the Zindi conflict comes to an end and we are expecting our heroes to just come home to their big Federation welcome, we quickly figure out that not all is as it seems, and the Enterprise is greeted by 1940-style warplanes over New York City. And obviously we have time jumped, and we haven't just time jumped. Time is different in this future. And we find out that the Nazis have advanced much further than they ever did in our own real history, and that they are being helped by aliens. And really what's going on is a big temporal Cold War story, and the Suliban are back, and Daniels is back. And basically the plot is how do we fix the current timeline to restore our future and get everybody back where they belong? How was that?
Fantastic. Lovely. Thanks for that, Christos. So you brought up the temporal Cold War there. Let's jump in straight into it. Obviously, with it being the final season of Enterprise, this was the final temporal Cold War story. Whether it was designed to end that storyline or not, who knows? But when Enterprise was launched, this is kind of an ongoing theme that has gone through the series. It was the thing. And so I just wanted to start by talking about the temporal Cold War a little bit and ask, what did you think of it? Did you like it as an idea? Do you think it was executed well? Was it a miss? What do you think, Mark?
I thought it was a great story idea, and I loved the Suliban. I liked that it has threads that could continue through all of the series, and it gave real stakes. And I was thinking of that this episode, because really, like, we know through you know, the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Federation survives, right? So how are they going to make stakes that are like world universe ending on a show where you know everything's going to turn out okay at the end, right? So this was a way to do that. By injecting the temporal Cold Wars, they could essentially break time, and all of the stuff that we love might not have happened, right? So it allowed them to have a little bit more stakes, which I thought was cool. Again, I like the Suliban. And what I was thinking about also is they did touch on it in this new season of Strange New Worlds, where they had that temporal agent come through as well, and La'an had to go back in time and do that stuff. So I love that it's still something that is relevant. And for all the people out there that were like, oh, like the 1990s, World War III, all that stuff, you know, that didn't happen in the 90s. What are you saying? You know, they're all shouting about canon. Well, here is something they set up with Enterprise where maybe because of time things that happened at that point, it got shifted. We don't know, you know, but they're always playing with time and Trek, and it does adjust things. And I like that that allows them to have a little bit more space to play with canon in some of the newer shows.
Yeah. What about you, Christos? Are you a fan of the old temporal Cold War?
Sometimes. I like some of the temporal Cold War episodes, and some of them just kind of don't land for me. I think it's a good idea. I like that it's really based in like these sci-fi type ideas, and they're kind of cerebral type episodes that make you have to really think to wrap your mind about what's happening. I mean, it's kind of all time travel type episodes, which is like the theme of this whole series we're doing here. So I like it for all of that. Like I said, some of the episodes hit really well for me, and some of them, like this two-parter, I really enjoy this two-parter. I think it's done really well. So it all kind of depends on the episode. I think maybe in retrospect, maybe this whole concept got introduced a little too early into Enterprise, but you know, I do like it there.
Well, it was kind of introduced in the pilot, wasn't it? Because you have the Suliban, you have Future Guy in the pilot. So yeah, I think because obviously Enterprise got cancelled, they never really had the opportunity to properly explain all the loose threads that we had. And I don't know if that's made it good because it's a bit more mysterious and you draw your own conclusions, or whether it was just a bit messy and unresolved. Like, there was a lot of rumors going around that Future Guy was supposed to be Archer himself, sending messages to the past, so that would have been cool. And like you've just said, Mark, about you know, the Department of Temporal Investigation showing up on Strange New Worlds, they mentioned the temporal wars in Discovery as well, didn't they? So they've kind of carried it through. But I remember seeing lots of interviews with the cast of Enterprise, and apparently they all hated the Temporal Cold War because they didn't understand it, they didn't know where they were going with it, and they hate it when fans ask about it at conventions. So let's ask them next time we see them and see what they do.
I'm really shocked that we haven't seen in any iteration of Trek the Suliban come back, because what a cool looking alien, what a cool concept for an alien. I love the Suliban. That was one of the better contributions, I feel like, alien wise in that series, and they're just written off.
Yeah.
Doesn't Mariner mention Suliban at one point in a Lower Decks episode?
I think probably.
Is it in Cupid's Errant Arrow, where she's trying to come up with all the conspiracy theories about Boimler's girlfriend? She's got like the mood board.
Yeah, I think they are mentioned. They're at least mentioned. So at least, well, you know, there's that. Yeah, I do like that Star Trek glue, I call it. Like, you know, Discovery mentions the Temporal Cold War, Strange New Worlds and whatnot. I call it Star Trek glue whenever things get like just a little reference so we know it all ties together.
Yeah. What you mentioned about we never see the Suliban, I think that was one of my bigger problems with Enterprise being a prequel series. And I remember thinking it a lot about the Denobulans. I used to think, were they white? Is there a reason we didn't see them in Next Gen DS9? You know, they're a founding member of the Federation, you would have thought.
Yeah.
Did they get wiped out? You know, so that's kind of the same with the Suliban. They never kind of come back, do they? So there's a lot of retconning of that now. We get lots of Denobulans in Discovery. And have they been in Strange New Worlds yet? If we have Denobulans in Strange New Worlds.
I think we have.
Yeah. Probably change the makeup and they're unrecognizable. don't forget, the Temporal Cold War did give us some really good stuff as well. We got the Enterprise J. So we've got the continued lineage of the Enterprise. So do you not like that version,
ooh,
Mark?
It shouldn't exist. It's stupid. And I'm done.
But I feel like J, right? So we're all the way up to G in 2401. So H-I-G-H-I-J. So we got to hold on to the next few Enterprises for a long time.
Yeah. There's either a really healthy Enterprise that lasts a good few hundred years, or we get a period without any Enterprises. Time out on the Enterprise.
Time out. Yeah.
Oh, love it. Love it. So that's Temporal Cold War. The other kind of the storyline and the theme of the episode is obviously the World War II aspect. And I just wanted to have a conversation with you both about World War II, Star Trek, Nazis. Has it been overdone. We've had several episodes that have featured World War II prior to this episode of Enterprise. And is it just a repeating trope? Did you appreciate it? Did you just think, oh, it's just the Killing Game again with better graphics? What were your thoughts on the World War II aspect?
I mean, they are trying to connect, I think, to TOS and some of the things that they did. So there's that. And I kind of like that they do that. But I'm not German. If I actually lived in Germany, I'd be like, oh, no, not another Nazi episode.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's this whole thing in cinema and culture and whatnot where that whole era is romanticized in a way, good and bad. And so we love to make movies and tell stories there. And you have writers and directors and, you know, that like that. So they want to go write a story there. I would say, this was 20 years ago, but, you know, the whole time travel trope in general was probably like getting old. I do remember when this aired in live, whatever. And although I do appreciate the episode now, watching it 20 years later, I always liked the episode, but I didn't want this when it happened. I wanted them to just be home. I didn't want to go down this road. And I think I recently read that this was supposed to be a season-long arc and it got killed. This is new information from just like a month or two ago. I don't know where I heard it from, but it was this whole, maybe in the whole Manny Coto passing away type thing. I think it's something to do with him coming in as showrunner and he stopped it or something.
That's true.
That's
true.
Okay, there it is. So I'm very glad it got stopped. I would have been beside myself if we didn't get the Enterprise home and just get to bask in the glory of the Zindi thing being wrapped up and watching, you know, our heroes come home. But
when the new showrunner took over, that was his mandate. Let's finish this arc as soon as humanly possible so we can move on to the business of Trek.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And that's kind of what I felt like. At this point, I didn't want any more time travel. Let's just go do some good Trek. And I think time travel is a crutch for Star Trek writers sometimes because they can't find enough to play in the sandbox of current, you know, timeline. They have to go do something. Oh, it'll be interesting to go jump into, or it'll be cheaper sometimes for production reasons to go shoot in 1996 LA or, you know, 2022 LA or, you know, LA. Anyways, so yes, World War II has been overdone to answer that in a long round.
I'm very much with you that I remember at the time when this came out, I was like, oh, really? You know, because I obviously with the reveal of the space Nazi at the end of Zero Hour in season three, we're like, oh my God, what the hell is this now? But yeah, that kind of episode three where they get home, I think it's called Home, isn't it? That's like the family episode after Best of Both Worlds. I would kind of watch the end of season three of Enterprise and then watch the Home episode where they arrive back at San Francisco. I don't know, maybe this is because I'm the token Brit here, that World War II, it seems just a little bit too close to home to be entertainment, I find. It's making things, you know, the Nazis, obviously the atrocities with all the Holocaust, you know, it's not something that we're very comfortable over here making entertainment about. The very important stories to tell from a historical perspective, so we're not doomed to repeat them. But whenever I see it in Star Trek, I would be like, ooh. And I think it gets worse that now as time goes on. You know, 2023, I'm a little bit more triggered by it than I was as a teenager 20 years ago.
What did you think of the Winston Churchill impersonator?
I thought he was quite good. It was nearly as good as your British accent, Mark.
Nearly. It was nearly as good. All right. Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's more Oliver Twist than Vosk. So I think.
I'm Mary Poppins. So, you know, thanks.
Yeah. I always thought it quite odd that they gave Vosk not just a British accent, but the most what we call Queen's English or King's English, I guess it is now. Like really, its form we call received pronunciation. It's the most British of British accents. So there's no way the Germans would have aligned with that accent. So it was kind of messed up the story a little bit there. Did you notice as well all of the bad language in this episode? I don't know if it doesn't strike as much now because we're used to a little bit of cursing in Star Trek as we've got in more modern series. But yeah, there was quite a lot of bastard, son of a bitch, which was... we didn't really do that back then.
It's so common in American television that I guess I totally missed that during my rewatch. No impact. I guess I'm very desensitized to it.
I noticed, but I chalk it up to the free and wheeling days of the early Federation Starfleet, you know, pre-Kirk. Because even Kirk was a little free and loose. Maybe not with the language, but they were a little, you know.
Let's not forget that Enterprise was trying to be hip and current and honestly barely got a fourth season. I mean, it was, I remember when we found out season four was going to happen, it was a big relief. Mm. So I think they were trying maybe really hard to, I mean, this was going to be their last go to try to save the show. So maybe there was a little bit more to get a little edgier in some of the writing and whatnot.
Yeah.
Storytelling.
I think speaking of edgy writing, there's a scene in, I think, part one of this where Archer's walking through the streets with Alicia and they get stopped by the Germans and they're being really racist. And it's brutal. It's awful to watch. And I guess it should be that kind of, you know, visceral. Exactly.
It should be realistic. That reaction.
It was a little too well done. It's quite shocking. I found that scene.
You know, I like that. I feel like it's probably accurate for the time, and that's important to tell. Especially,
yeah, we don't want to revise history, even though it's revisionist history.
Yeah, well, especially as other people are trying to rewrite history and make the civil rights era and whatnot sound like it was no big deal, and you know things weren't that bad, and people need to see that it was.
If you were black, gay, or Jewish, it certainly was. As we said, new season, new showrunner. Manny Coto was brought in to kind of deliver season four of Enterprise. And then we obviously sadly lost him earlier this year. So I think it's kind of only right and proper that we kind of pay tribute to Manny and what he actually brought, not only to these episodes, but to kind of Enterprise itself. I'm certainly in the camp of, oh my god, Enterprise was just getting really good, and you know, season three was great, season four was magnificent, and
yes,
my agreed. God, we were robbed of a season five. So it might be a no-brainer question, but is there anything you didn't like, maybe that the roads that they went down with Manny, or do you think he got it spot on?
You know, I love, like, okay, so one of my favorite arcs ever is that three-part Vulcan episode, the Vulcan Forge and whatnot, and where the, you know, I love those three episodes, especially together. It's hard for me not to even just watch them together, one, two, three, as a clip. I think the only thing season four dealt with a lot of things that had to do with, you know, like, you know, the, I'm trying to think, xenophobia, there it is. You know, Phlox getting beat up, I think, in an episode. And then what happens with T'Pol and Trip and the baby and stuff like that. I get it. I guess it would seem natural that could happen, especially this was all very post 9/11, right? And they're trying to mirror what was happening in America, which was, you know, some of the backlash toward, you know, Middle Eastern people after 9/11. And that's what they were really trying to show. It was, what happened there and some of the prejudices there. And we get some of that in season three as well. Maybe it's a little uncomfortable to watch, but I get it why it's there. Like I said, Star Trek is always a mirror of what's happening with us. But maybe it's a little heavy handed and maybe we needed to get back to space more instead of showing what's happening on Earth. But not to say there aren't a ton of amazing episodes in season four.
I liked what they did with some of the, I guess, the original series species. Like we see the Orions more, and when the Orion slave girls take over the ship and they're using their pheromones and stuff, like that's a classic episode of TOS. It's a classic episode of Enterprise. It's the same when, you know, they go to the Andorians. So we learn more about the Andorians and the Enar and all that through Enterprise. And the Enar episode is a season 4 episode. And we got Hemmer because of that episode. And so there's just, they did a lot, like they went into the mirror universe, but they didn't spend a whole half a season on it. They did a couple of episodes and they're out. And what they did was they went back to the original series set and you know, had some of it take place there. So you get the member berries and whatnot that you did in Trials and Tribulations. So I feel like they, similar to what Lower Decks is doing and things like that, where they are giving you these Easter eggs, but then taking these Star Trek themes and what have you, and just elevating them and showing you them from a different light. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah. And let's not like forget that some of these things were the first time we ever saw them. Like when we saw them go to the mirror universe and we see the Defiant that had been pulled through, that was the first time we actually saw the classic Enterprise model, classic Constitution class in high def, looking amazing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the renderings, we only had the 1960s versions of the ship to that point, right? So watching the Enterprise flying is so, or the Enterprise, the Defiant was so beautiful. So there were things that were like really landed. I mean, I call it fan service, and maybe that's what it was, but it was really exciting to see, because it, you know, we take it for granted now. We see a lot of Easter eggs and a lot of references, you know, but now that was the first time we saw that, and it was pretty yeah. cool.
It was so beautiful the way they did the ship so classically rather than Strange New Worlds updating version, but yet still it still felt more futuristic than like the NX-01, you know, with the technology on board, even though it's a 60s model. So I think they did right. that really well. Mark, you might be able to answer this. You seem to be doing the fact checking today, but wasn't it a rumor that they did the Space Nazis ending to the Zindi arc to leave a massive cliffhanger so that the show would get season 4? I'm pretty sure that was on the center seat. With Gates McFadden. Oh,
possibly. That part I don't remember. But I do remember that they were actually going to kill Archer there and continue on without him. But they decided to bring him back.
Yeah, I believe that whoever came in to do season 4 kind of just had to undo that kind of cliffhanger mess. But what you've just mentioned earlier, Christos, of they panned the idea of a season long. My God, I think that might be one of Manny Coto's best decisions that he made. So
for sure. You know, I had recently heard that killing Archer thing, and you know, I'm not gonna lie, Archer was never my favorite captain. I felt there were times when Scott Bakula completely overacted, almost to a kind of a Kirk trope. And then there was other times that I loved Archer. I'm gonna go out there on a limb, and I might get beat up in comments and feedback, but I think I would have been okay for them to shake things up that bad and kill Archer and introduce a new captain, which is Ooh. Not necessarily what our topic is about this week. But on the other hand, we'll just drop that.
Maybe promote to Paul or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that could have been cool. Yeah.
I've said this, I don't know how many million times on various podcasts, but I do really like Scott Bakula. He's great to the fans. He's great in so many Agreed. Shows and movies. He's such a phenomenal actor, and the franchise is blessed to have him. But Archer really was a shit captain. I will never appreciate him as a captain of the Enterprise. I don't think I liked a single episode he was in. But yeah, yes,
all of them then.
Come at me. But I, that's not to detour from the actor, who I do appreciate. And like I said, he's been great to the fans. Would I like to see him in Strange New Worlds? Yeah, I think they could probably do him better than he was done in Enterprise. But I never got Archer in Enterprise. I was never sold.
Well, to clarify my words a little more, it's nothing against Scott Bakula. It was the way the character was written. He was written as arrogant at times, mm-hmm. super, super naive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes very self-righteous, you know, like, so, and it got better as it went, but I feel like these are reasons why season one and two don't land very well and don't hold up as well either, you know, because that's why people weren't getting into it. I remember I checked out for half a season two. I actually had stopped watching Enterprise, so it's done.
Wow.
And in real time. And then I came back when I heard about what they were going to do for season three. And then I finished this. And I've since obviously gone back and watched those episodes. But I was one of those major fans that was done with Star Trek. I was like, okay. And I did come back. But I was
yeah,
like,
and my feelings are completely aligned with Christos. Like, that is why I have the feelings that I have. Because the character wasn't written well. You know, it's not Scott Bakula's fault. It just wasn't a well-written character. And there was a few not well-written characters on the show, which stinks because it had a lot of good ideas and great potential. Mayweather. They could have done so much, but he was so underutilized. Kind of like the Ensign Kim of that series. I would have loved to see them develop that Boomer character more. It was such an interesting concept that just didn't really go anywhere with it, you know? I don't know.
I'm going to stand up for speak on behalf of the Captain Archer fans who are out there listening. You were probably sobbing at the moment after that.
Darren Dallas, go ahead, Kelvin.
I love him. I love Archer. And I like the God, it sounds so cheesy to say, the journey that the character went on. And in this episode, when Cilic says, "You've changed, Captain," you know, that kind of... That. You know, he's a lot grittier now after the Zindi arc. He's been through a lot. So that kind of initial naivety that he had has been beaten out of him because of the Zindi arc. And he's come back with his ruffled hair. And he's,
yeah.
Well,
and like I said, it got better. It got better as it went. Yeah. And season four is great. Season four is the best season of Enterprise. So whatever the changes that we're making, it was very good, and it was a little too late. So I just wondered if replacing the captain would have gotten enough buzz in the media to give people another shot at the show, because that would have been a media level event, got a lot of talk. It would have been very controversial. Star Trek's never really done that before, right? Well, not until Discovery, changing captains several times, but it would have been news. All right, Mark, let's jump into some assimilations and regenerations. The initial reluctance to use the transporter was finally gone and used lots this point forward. Yeah, I noticed that too. It was like, wow, people are just beaming down. They're not making a big deal about it.
Yeah, they've been using it for a number of years. It's been sufficiently tested. So that was good to see. I like that at the first season, they were reluctant to use it, and even like, you know, into the second, but at this point, you know, they've spent enough time with the transporter technology. I'm glad that they are finally deciding to use it.
Yeah. That was part of the whole deal with Enterprise, was trying to, like, you know, tie their hands a little bit on some of the technology to allow for more storytelling. Mm-hmm. And like I said, by season four, I think, you know, you see that, and it wasn't just transporters. Now we have phase cannons and proton, you know, the photon torpedoes and things like that. And it's starting to feel like what we expect in Star Trek.
Yeah. Oh, so I will say this about the episode. The way that the editors took classic, like, old World War II footage, and they sort of spliced it and manipulated it to make it look like the Germans had invaded New York and the East Coast and what have you of America, was really good. Like, it was kind of cool the way they did that. So props to the editing team, because I like that aspect. It helped build the world that that we were witnessing.
Yeah. I don't know if you're like the scene in sickbay where Phlox secretly tells Archer that Trip isn't who he seems to be via pad, and then he calls security without Cilic knowing. I thought that was really oh wow. I felt like that was another moment of them not being naive, and I liked it.
Yeah, so much was communicated in a single look in that scene. It was so good when he just kind of says, Captain, just read this. A little bit like the scene in Picard that we got, you know, where Picard said, oh, I've got some medical results coming, I need to read it, but it was then flashed up on a massive 70-inch screen.
Yeah, I feel like that. And that was like, back to what we were saying, like, they're 200 years in the future from us now. Like, why are we not the, you know, we're sitting here like, you dummies all the time watching Enterprise, right? But now, and so I always felt like they were just being bamboozled too much on Enterprise. And here they, like, okay, now they're acting like we expect in Star Trek. And mm-hmm. I love that there.
I really like one of the final scenes where you see the timeline reset and it goes through all of the history. Obviously, it starts with like the dinosaurs, but you then see like all the American presidents and UK prime ministers. And it's just really weird for me to see Margaret Thatcher in Star Trek.
I saw Hillary, Bill and Hillary Clinton. I saw them too. And I was like, oh, yeah, Margaret Thatcher. Like, all right.
Yeah. Oh, well, we didn't get any Trump, so fortunately the timeline didn't reset itself that much.
Oh, Lord.
So what about any regenerations? I didn't think there was actually that much wrong with this episode. There's not too much I disliked.
So for me, the aliens that were the space Nazis... So I liked the makeup and stuff. They did a good job on them. Like, so kudos to the makeup and arts department for creating a new alien. But like, I felt like it would have been better if we would have used an existing alien in its place, right? Somebody that we already knew or invested in. These are already villains in Trek. And like, oh, here they just showed up here. And oh, they're trying to mess with the timeline. And it's future versions of these aliens that we know. That would have been amazing. But instead, they just threw these random gray aliens at us with red eyes. And we never learn about them. And they're never talked about ever again. We don't know anything about the culture. So I think it kind of lowered the stakes. I just wish that they would have been used a different alien. That's all.
Yeah. Point to that, Mark, with they expanded on the temporal Cold War storyline in Star Trek Online a number of years ago. And that was one of the confusing things, that you didn't know exactly how many factions there were and which species were involved in the temporal Cold War. Is it, mm-hmm. you know, we've got the Sulubans, you've got whoever Future Guy was, you've got these guys, Daniels. But if it tied the Star Trek Online tied it back to Captain's Holiday with the Vorgons in TNG, who were a kind of aliens of the week. So your point there, they could have used the Vorgons. And that would have been a second outing for an established alien race who do time travel.
Would have loved that. Oh, yeah. What a good idea.
Didn't get the Toxu tats, but they can join the Nazis. Okay, shall we move on to some trivia?
Sure.
Go on, I'll let you start us off, Christos. You can try and pronounce them.
Vosk was a member of the Nakul, although the species was never named on screen.
Yeah, so it was that only was in the production notes. For you. I know, I love it. Actually, I hate it that you didn't get it wrong.
A deleted scene included in the season 4 DVD shows a conversation between Saul and Archer, where Archer attempts to cover up aliens being seen as experiments that Germans were conducting on people.
I think it's an interesting point, and it certainly wouldn't have been this piece of trivia if what you've just said about changing out Captain Archer actually took place. But with the addition of this episode, Enterprise actually became the first Star Trek series to start season 4 without having any change in the cast up until that point. So if you think of all the other Treks, they had people come, people go. Enterprise is the only one that had the original cast all the way through.
I literally was reading that while you were saying it, and I'm doing all the math in my head. And even DS9 had the addition of Worf in season 4, right? Yeah, season 4. 7 of 9, we had Beverly Crusher come and go. We lost Tasha Yar on TNG. And then we didn't have a season 4 TOS. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's pretty cool to think about. Funny, I just was reminded, like, I had to go away for a long work trip, but the day I was packing, I was watching Scorpion, and I'm like, oh, I left Scorpion halfway done. I need to go back and finish that. And then it was the introduction of 7 and 9. So I'm in part 2. So I got some homework after this anyway.
Yeah. Even TOS, though, they introduced Chekhov in season 2.
True, true. They did have changes.
Lower Decks has given us Tilin, although she's not cast as a main cast member, is she? She's more of a guest star.
Yeah.
And then we lost TAS had Emress.
Yeah. Let's not get into skin a cat.
This marks the second time that J. Paul Bohmer has played a German soldier in Star Trek, the previous time being in Star Trek Voyager's two-part episode, The Killing Game.
Oh, Lord.
See? We're even that wasn't good same episode. Actors.
He's typecast.
Part two is the only time we see Star Trek veteran guest star John Fleck as a human. All previous roles have been in heavy makeup.
Yeah.
I like that. I was noticing that this morning when I was rewatching. I'm like, it was probably like when Mark Almos got to play Gal Dukat as a Bajoran, and like, oh, I can finally be on screen without a ton of makeup.
Yeah.
The Bajoran is still an alien, but it was mm-hmm. like this. They were seeing the Sulban guy as a human. It was like, oh, that's how the actor looks. And it was probably like, oh, at least for this day, I don't have to go through all that. It probably felt really good.
Do you know what? As well, he's a very handsome man, John Fleck. Obviously, 20 years ago, but I did see him on the Shuttle Pod show as one of their guests. And yeah, it's a bit of a crime to cover him up in that much makeup. Speaking of makeup, Tom Wright, who played Garath, one of the Nakul officers, he previously played Tuvix on Voyager. So that was a return to Star Trek for old Tuvix, which is obviously very topical at the moment with the recent Lower Decks.
Tuvix.
The final scene of Enterprise being escorted to Earth by other Starfleet ships was very reminiscent of the final scene of Voyager Endgame, in which the same thing happens.
Which is totally how I wanted season three to end. We got there. It just took two more episodes.
Exactly. Well, you know, I remember what you always say, Christos, about, you know, 10 episode seasons. There's no time to waste. They had 26 or 22, I think, for season four. So they could get away with it.
Yeah.
We'll let them off. Right, guys. Final thoughts time. What did you think of this time travel endeavor?
It was good. I liked it a lot more than I thought it would. Still not as good as Voyager Endgame, but not Voyager Endgame. What is the Voyager episode with the Nazis?
The Killing Game.
The Killing Game. It was a game. The Killing Game. So still was not as good as Killing Game, but I did enjoy it. I like that it got wrapped up. This would not have been a good season long arc thingy, but two-parter, I enjoyed it. A lot more than I thought it would.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I really enjoyed the two-parter, having the context taken away of it, how I felt about it actually happening when it did. And I really, really enjoyed the alternate U.S. history, German history, whatnot. It was kind of more of a what-if episode in some ways. What if the Germans had got there? I like that they really explained, too, that it was like, you know, Lenin got assassinated, and so Russia never became a problem for Germany, and they focused all on the West, and that's how they were able to grow so strong so fast. I really liked there was some thought into it, and like I said, as a, you know, it's aged well, I guess it will, as what I will say, and to wrap that up, it's aged well. It was a really fun 2-hour watch.
Yeah, I think it's aged very well as well. I'll agree with you there, Christos, and I enjoyed the rewatch. You know, aside from my earlier opinions on kind of World War II being kind of done to death in Star Trek and not really something I enjoy for entertainment, I think this was a good time travel episode. And I applause to everyone involved in the production of this and Manny Coto, because it got us sorted. It set season four off to a strong start and finally got us home at the end.
What shows are on BQN, you ask? Well, here's a rundown of some podcasts you might be interested in. All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast covering all of Trek, hosted by Amy, Mark, Christos, and Kelvin. Bargain Bin Gamer, a YouTube show hosted by Davey, a self-proclaimed gamer who specializes in reviewing and showcasing affordable video games. If you're lost in the Delta Quadrant, check out The Captain's Couch, a Star Trek Voyager podcast hosted by Jeremiah sitting on Janeway's Ready Room couch. Cinema Z, a film discussion and review podcast showcasing films you probably missed but should definitely check out, hosted by Mark, Matt, and Laz. Beam Aboard the Galaxy Class, a Star Trek Next Generation podcast covering all of TNG, hosted by Amy, Joe, Rhea, and Kevin. History with the Zilagis, a snippet of historical events from around the world, hosted by Chrissy and Jason. For the newest Trek coverage, check out Infinite Diversity, hosted by Chrissy and Thad. Test your Trek knowledge with Trekspert's Quiz, a Star Trek quiz show hosted and written by Davey. Union Federation, covering all things Star Trek and the Orville, which we all know is really a Star Trek show, hosted by Kyle, Kevin, Amy, and Haley. Spill the Tea with What's the Tea, Bev?, a Trek current events and fan interview show hosted by Christos. And for our Patreon members, we have The Hive Mind, BQN's monthly roundtable discussion with hosts and listeners. It's Green, a cornucopia of topics hosted by Mark. And Amy's Math Moments, a quick look at math moments in Star Trek, hosted by Amy. We know you have a choice of podcasts to choose from, and we thank you for listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
All right, so we hope you'll join us next week where we'll be diving into our Fear Factor series, part three, with Discovery's Context is for Kings, which, if you remember, is season one, episode three, or as I like to call it, the second pilot for Discovery. And yeah, I'm actually looking forward to rewatching that. I do enjoy the first season of Discovery. I know it's controversial for some, but I really enjoyed it.
There were some gems. This is one of the gems. I enjoy it too. We get Lorca in this one. There's that big chase scene through the Jeffrey's tubes with Michael Burnham, and she has to like jump down into the shuttlecraft. Anyway, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
Love that. Love that episode.
I worry it's going to start me off on a Discovery rewatch. I'm going to go straight in at this and I'm going to carry on.
I'm a mess, man. You guys just got me started back on season four of Enterprise. I just mentioned earlier that I'm kind of starting season four of Voyager right now. And I know this is going to make me want to watch season one of Discovery all over again. So I guess it's a good time to be a Trekkie. We have all this crap to pull from and just enjoy it. It's good stuff.
Well, summer is over. We've got to have something to do up till Christmas.
Well, I mean, we're only getting a 25-minute episode of Lower Decks every week right now, and we're going to have nothing for a long time, I think, after this wraps up. So I guess I have all this great Trek to watch.
We would love to hear what you thought of today's episode, and hope you'll join us on our Facebook group, the BQN Collective, to continue our discussion there. You can also tweet or Blue Sky your thoughts at All Good Pod, and please make sure you follow the network on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. We've also partnered with our friends at the Fandom Podcast Network, where you can find us by searching the master feed. So, Mark, where can people find you when you're not emerging from the shadows with your scurry red eyes?
Oh my.
Admiral Thrawn.
Oh my. Well, when I'm not doing that, you guys can listen to me on Cinema Z. It's a film discussion podcast. And we, you know, have a couple cocktails and talk about some of our favorite films and have a lot of laughs. So please check me out there. Also, I'm in the BQN Collective Facebook group. You can also find me on Blue Sky at MW207. And Christos, where can people find you when you are not discovered to be a shapeshifter, not really Trip Tucker, and you're a Sulaban, and
You just stole mine.
I don't know what happened. See, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. So when you're not doing that, what are you doing?
You can also find me on Facebook in the BQN Collective. You can find me on Twitter X, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and at GreekGeekSD. I really am going to start deleting some profiles. I think, guys, it's getting to be a little too much. You can also find me on my other little podcast at What's the Tea, Bev? Here on the BQN, which I'm looking forward to starting a couple of new episodes here in the next few weeks. So you're going to have another kind of 3-4 episode block ahead here to look forward to. And Kelvin, where can people find you when you're not denying the existence of time travel?
The Vulcan Science Directorate has concluded time travel is not real. When I'm not doing that, you can find me on Facebook in the BQN Collective, or you can head over to Instagram, Twitter, Threads, and find me at Kelvin's Timeline.
Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. It helps others to find the show. You can also follow the entire network's podcast with our master feed by searching BQN.
At this time, we would like to thank our associate producers, Mahedran Radhakrishnan and Tim Cooper. A special thanks to Graham Kelly for our opening and closing music, and of course to our very own Mark White for our artwork each and every week.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you too can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We'll add you to the Hive Mind Facebook group so you can enjoy It's Green, Amy's Math Moment, and a slew of other network perks. With a monthly subscription of $5 or more, you can join our meetings on the Hive Mind Roundtable discussion on the second Saturday of each month. Visit patreon.com/BQN to get all the details and watch your messages.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you'll join us as we continue to search out
all good things.